Welcome to Creators. Building a network for those who hate networking, part two. The questions this cast answers are, how do I build a network when I hate networking? Why are relationships so important? And how do I build relationships when it's not natural for me?
If you've read the Effective Hiring Manager book, the new book by Mark, and you have questions like, exactly what questions should I ask for this role? Or how does that apply for that role? Then the Effective Hiring Manager Conference is coming to DC, along with the Effective Manager and the Effective Communicator, November 12th through 14th. You'll be able to ask any question you like, and Sarah will answer them. And you could do all three conferences and be really set and ready for the new year and the new decade. Go to our website and look for training to find out more.
If you're going to a conference, take business cards and share them.
Yes.
If you want to connect on a personal level, so not on your business level, like scribble your cell phone number on the back and tell people, oh, my personal cell's on the back. You can do a whole bunch of them in your room the night before and have them with you. And business cards might seem archaic. They probably are archaic when you can just swap contact details on your phone, right? You can put two phones together and magically they know who the other person is. But there's something about the physical reminder of who you are. There's something about your handwriting on the back of it. Even if that person takes a picture of the card or scans the card later, there's something about that physical and mental image that helps them remember you. There's something I read that said that the more senses you engage when you're trying to remember something, the easier it is. So if you say it out loud, if you feel it, so feel a business card, you see the image on a business card, that you've got 4 out of 5 senses. Three out of five. I told you I can't math.
Right.
But you're using a multitude of senses, and that helps people remember you. So even though business cards seem archaic, they're actually really useful. And they're another way of like making a connection. Like, and you know how hard it is to tell someone your email address, to spell it out. It's like
to spell it out. Exactly. Yeah. Now, relationship building at events like this doesn't stop, though, at other attendees. Building relationships with the people that organize the events, who probably have a lot of connections that you could utilize, is absolutely effective, something that we recommend you do. So for the organizer at the event, going up, thanking them for organizing it right after it's occurred. When we at Manager Tools go on site, which we do with many client groups, to deliver training to an organization, after the fact, the presenters, we send a thank you card to the sponsor, who may or may not have been in the room, but thanking them for trusting us, bringing in the guidance, some behavioral comments about how the group reacted. There was lots of smiling faces, for example, in the crowd. It was really good to see. And we write our thank you cards. If you've received one, you'll notice the bad handwriting, which will clue you into the fact that we're doing it in airports or we're doing it on airplanes on our way home, in an effort to mail them as soon as we get somewhere where we can find a post office. So I typically mail them as soon as I get back to my house or when you get to the airport after you've landed back at your home. Because in that case, the value isn't just in the personalized card. Rather, it's also in the speed. The quicker that the thank you card can be received by the recipient, the more sincere it seems. It's more of a, oh, they were occurring to me on the flight home, rather than it was just checking a box.
Yeah, they wanted to talk to me so much, they made the effort to do it on the flight home.
Exactly, on the flight home. And if you're curious, yes, there is a podcast for that as well. Of writing thank you notes. Yeah. Go figure.
And you can also thank the speakers for speaking. So and sometimes you can't find a mailing address, or you know that the speaker will be around later, so you might need to send an email. A lot of the time, if people are speaking at conferences, they have their own website and you can send them a mail there. And a great speaker might get a lot of thank yous, But if you're the first person or amongst the first, then you're memorable. I did this at a huge conference, and a guy who was head of marketing at Ford, he did an amazing, amazing presentation, really, really good. And he was the last one of the day. So I went up to change for dinner, and while I was upstairs, I quickly looked up his name and found an email address, because he was the head of marketing for Ford. So his email address was available, and sent him, sent him an email, and he would have got it maybe half an hour after he walked off the stage. And so I sent him an email and said, hey, I really enjoyed your session. I thought the way you presented X, Y, and Z was really good. Thank you. I appreciate your time and energy. And the funny thing was, he replied and said, I love manager tools.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Which is funny when that happens. I was busy admiring him, and he was admiring us. But it did make me memorable. The next day when he was hanging around, and I walked up to him and said, hi, I'm Wendy. We talked yesterday by email, and he remembered who I was.
Exactly. And you should know, guys, if you think that these people don't need to be thanked because they're just doing their job and that's what we pay them to do, then you're wrong. One, just because somebody doesn't need something doesn't mean that you oughtn't give it.
Yeah. Didn't we just say that? You might not need help, but you can accept it.
Exactly. And by not thanking them, there is inherently an implication that you think they don't need thanks. It's beneath you. And that's not nice, right?
That's not the way to make friends.
Yeah. As somebody that does this, that is the speaker, we get thanked far less often than you might think. So don't hesitate thinking, oh, they're going to get a zillion emails. It's not even, I'm just going to blend into the pack. Chances are, you should know, there's not a pack. So it's worth it every time.
And if you think that the person didn't do a great job as a speaker, you can still say thank you. Just because you didn't learn anything or you thought they weren't great doesn't mean that they shouldn't be thanked for the effort they put in, the time they put in, their willingness to be the person to stand up at the front. I think it's the second biggest fear of all humans is public speaking. And like death is number three. And I think heights is one. But so many people hate public speaking, probably you. And just right. Thank the person for being willing to be that person and put them up there and be judged. That deserves a thank you too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, here we go. Rule number three, use your strengths.
Everybody has strengths. So you want to use them. That is the more rational, logical, task-focused of us are not at a disadvantage when it comes to relationships. If we go back to the DISC model, the high I's are usually the individuals that are pointed out as great relationship builders. They're people persons. They build huge networks. That wasn't a real word. That would be something an I would do, put two words together, huge connections and networks. However, with all of those strengths in tow, high I's promise things that they at times don't deliver on. They tend to also forget important details, sometimes speak before they think of the words that they are saying. All of those things are actually destructive to a relationship. Now, those of you that we're talking to today, that is, the opposite of those weaknesses is true for the high C's. High C's don't miss meetings. They're very organized. They do what they say they're going to do, although sometimes it does take a bit longer to get it done. They do follow through on things they've committed to, and usually are super diplomatic in their communications with others. Now, these things are all strengths, all relationship builders. So really, it's about the fact that we all have strengths in relationships. We just want to leverage your own based on your profile.
When you're attending an event, make a plan and set goals for who you want to meet or how many people you want to meet. That's something that the logical, rational people, the counting people, are better at. Research the event. Who is going to be there? that you might want to meet. What one person might unlock a lot of relationships for you? Or, you know, what if you can meet that one person who's kind of the linchpin of a certain group that you want to get in with? Like, you need to know that ahead of time so that you can make a beeline for that person.
Yeah, exactly. Seek them out.
Once you know the people's names, then research them. Go to LinkedIn, look at their personal websites. What's their latest accomplishment that you might want to praise them for? Or say, oh, I saw you did X. That's one of those things to talk about when you don't know what to talk about. What are they working on that you might asking them about? And then when you're there, take notes about who you meet and what's important to them. There's something else you're good at. Taking notes and keeping them and having them available. If they mention their children, make a note of their names. If they mention they like really good coffee, make a note. These are the kind of interstitial moments and the information that you're looking for to build the relationship, right? If somebody you know really likes high-end, fancy coffee, and for some reason you are somewhere where you can buy, I don't know, half a pound. I have no idea how much half a pound of coffee is, but you can buy a thing of coffee and send it to them. It's like $20, maybe 15. And you've done something nice for them and you've connected with them on something that they're interested in.
Yeah.
That's a huge thing. And as a logical, rational, organized person, you have written down their name, written down that they like coffee, written down their address. You know where to send it to. You'll put it in a package and ship it before it goes off. And, you know, you have a huge bunch of advantages over a high eye that would probably walk into the store and go, oh, there was a guy I met and he loves this coffee. I should buy him one. But they won't do it. And if they do, they won't ship it. So,
right?
Play to your strengths.
Absolutely. Actually, in the book, Keith Ferrazzi recommends then taking that group of contacts and dividing it into three piles, the ones, twos, and threes. So your ones are those who you're actively involved with. So a friend or a business associate or someone that you're actively building a relationship with at the time. Twos then are the touch-base people. So touch-base people being individuals to contact on a quarterly basis, reaching out, keeping connected, but it's not an active thing at the moment. And then there are the threes. Threes are the people that you don't know well, who, for whatever reason, time, circumstance, you're unable to devote a significant amount of energy or time to pinging them or keeping that connection fresh on a regular basis. So these individuals in group three are strictly acquaintances, people met in passing, who found their way into the address book, but are not in an active state of any sort. Hope to reach out to them someday, but maybe only about once a year.
And I think that helps the logical, rational people, these high C's, in two ways. First, the idea of categorizing your contacts sounds like a perfect rainy day afternoon, rainy afternoon kind of job. You know, let's sit here and give all my and probably a high C would end up with, 100, 1 to 100, and have 5.7 in there as well. But that's okay. You can categorize them how you like. The other thing I think is important here is you can have people you know that you don't have to be contacting all the time. He has a group of people that he calls acquaintances that are group three. He knows who they are. He has them in his address book. He tries to talk to them once a year, but he doesn't have to. So I think that's one of the other things that scares people about relationships is that they think, oh, I have to have this really deep relationship with everybody. And that, as an introvert, feels like that's going to take a lot out of me. That's not true. You can have different levels of relationships, and probably 90% of the people you know will fall into group three, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. So Ferrazzi is a high I. He's a personable, sociable, the kind of person who draws people to him, the kind of person who says the more the merrier and actually means it. So the systematization, the categorization that he is doing is to help him with one of his weaknesses, which is forgetting to contact people and not being organized and wanting to do things but never getting around to it because there's too many more exciting things to do. So that's why he does it. But you can use systematization, which is something you're good at, to encourage yourself to reach out in the first place, right? If you set up a system, I think the podcast is called Control-Shift-K. It used to be the Outlook short code for to make a task, make a repeating task in the future. And I think it's in our first Building a Network cast. But what you do is you put a contact into Outlook, I think Mark was describing, and then you set a repeat to reach out to that person on a regular basis, depending on what group you put them into. For some of us who don't really want to do that action, having it come up on our task list and there being just one for that day makes it doable. So that's another thing that you can use this systematization to make the task easy for you to do.
Yeah, exactly. So if it's too cumbersome, you'll not do it.
Are you looking for a way to bring your team or organization together before the end of the year and teach them how to work better with one another and have more fun? Our effective communicator training teaches your professionals how to observe each other's natural behaviors and apply some easy logic so that they can tweak their own behavior and make it more in line with the person they're talking with. That makes them more successful. That will give you better results and more effectiveness. Who wouldn't want that? This is a full day of training that's interactive, fun, and will make conversations more relevant and useful to the cross-functional teams that you work with. If you want to know more, contact Maggie at maggie@manager-tools.com or check it on our website. Look for organizations in the menu bar.
The next rule is using your network, because after all, there's no point in us putting forth all of this effort and the systematization and categorizing and what have you into building this network if you're actually not going to do anything with it, right? We've got to use it. Now, we already said be generous and also allow others to be generous in return. So networks are great for things like getting an introduction to somebody that you may not know or and want or need to for whatever reason, finding somebody to go to an event with, putting people who can help each other in touch with one another, finding out about new opportunities, if you want to learn new things, getting data or information about topics you're researching, or solving difficult problems. So using your network, asking people you know to do things for you and doing things for them in return is just normal part of business and human interaction. Okay? Most of the things people ask you to do and which you ask them to do are completely small and ethical items, just tiny little things that human beings do for each other.
Because you imagine in your head when you don't want to do this, and therefore you're finding reasons, right? So if I have a networker, somebody is gonna ask me to do something, you know, they're gonna ask me to sell a $1 million house that they don't own, or they're gonna ask me to invest thousands of dollars in their investment program, which is actually a pyramid scheme, or
right,
they're gonna ask me to persuade all of my friends to vote for somebody on the council. All of that stuff happens and it makes the news. And it makes the news because it's newsworthy, not because it's common. like 0.1%.
They're outliers.
Yeah, maybe of the interactions between human beings are like this. The majority of the interactions are, you know, will you buy some Girl Scout cookies for my kid?
Right. He's super small.
Can you look at this page and give me your cut on, will you proofread this for me? Or will you tell me what you think of this before I send it to the boss? Or, hey, I have a $1 million house that I need to sell. I do own it. Let me know if you've got any friends who'd be interested. Right. This using your network path is not a slippery slope to Bernie Madoff. It's a gentle, undulating path to great relationships. I was just thinking of somebody I know who is, she's doing a master's in social work. And one of the things she had to do was doing some role plays. And so she came over to my house a couple of times, told me what I had to do. And we sat in my dining room. And for 10 minutes, I answered questions as if I was this person she needed in a role play. It didn't take me, it took 10 minutes. She's someone I like. I don't mind her being in my house. She was here for such a short time. I gave her some water. I didn't have to feed her. I didn't have to do anything.
Yeah, exactly.
It was the smallest thing. And yeah, without me, she couldn't do that exercise that she had to do for her course. So that's the kind of thing people will ask you to do. They're not going to ask you to buy their $1 million house. Promise.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Trust them. All right. Now we are at rule number 5, practicing etiquette. Etiquette is a set of rules that governs individuals' behavior in society. Now, of course, etiquette is not enforceable by law. If you break them, your contacts feel less warm towards you. Now, if you know the rules of etiquette, though, and you follow them, then there will be fewer awkward moments, which all of us are looking to avoid, and your conversations and relationships will go that much smoother.
And I put this in the, I put this next part in the podcast, and now I realize I cannot pronounce the person's name. So in the third millennium BC, some ancient person, I'm going to spell it for you so you can look it up. It's P-T-A-H-H-O-T-E-P. And he wrote the Maxims of himself, his name. And these are precepts extolling the civil virtues, truthfulness, self-control, and kindness towards one's fellow beings. Learning by listening to everybody and knowing that human knowledge is never perfect. So in the third millennia BC, he knew what we know, which is a congregation of humans needs some rules in order to get on or in order to be able to live in the same environment. And it hasn't changed. Truthfulness, self-control, kindness, learning by listening and knowing that you're not perfect and nor is anybody else. That's a pretty good set.
Yeah, it's a pretty good set. A pretty basic set. You don't need to read Emily Post. The most common etiquette rules are probably the ones that your mom taught you. If this individual in the third millennium knew them, your mom surely passed it on. So for example, saying please and thank you, or saying excuse me if you bump into somebody, reach across them, walk in front of them, right? Smiling. Smiling, guys, is the universal sign that you are not a threatening person. And to smile at individuals, you, one, have to look at their faces and not their phone. And two, you need to be mindful of the fact that if you're a D and a C, your smiling face isn't always recognizable to other human beings. Okay. Now, smile bigger. I say that as the least photogenic human being on the planet Earth. And I know what you're thinking, but you should know if an individual smiles at you and they perceive what you do in return as not being a smile, just like from an evolutionary standpoint, their brain thinks to themselves, I smiled at that person and they fought evolution not to smile back at me. Because babies, there's a certain stage in a baby's development. You smile at it, it smiles back. It's a reflex. Whether people realize it or not, if they smile at you and don't see a smile in return, it immediately feels jarring and unkind. I know that's not what you mean, and smile more. Also things like shaking hands, giving people a pass when they speak sharply or grumpily at you, assuming positive intent. Mm-hmm. Right? Maybe they're having a rough day. You have no idea what's going on. Be timely, super kind and respectful from an etiquette standpoint. Greeting people when you enter the room. If you're in an elevator and a person walks in, hello, good morning, what have you. Apologize.
Good morning is an excellent, because it doesn't need, good morning or good afternoon is an entire sentence, which is great. Whereas hi feels like it needs the rest of the sentence. good morning is enough.
Exactly. Here's a good one. I like this one. Apologize. Even when you feel it's not necessary, we could all take a little bit of notes of etiquette from the Canadians, right? Like myself, yes. Apologizing for like not doing anything wrong, acknowledging the fact that an event has just occurred, breaking the ice.
Yeah, or be British and you apologize when somebody bumps into you.
No, yeah, exactly. I do it all the time. I say, oh no, I'm so sorry. And it's not that I'm apologetic. I'm just acknowledging the fact that an event just occurred. It's a good icebreaker. Making small talk, things like that. Filling in awkward silences. Talk about the weather, what have you. Anything like that, all appropriate from an etiquette standpoint.
And they're all just human behavior 101. There is nothing difficult on that list. And since all the jobs with dogs and trees, as Mark often says, are taken, and your organization is full of humans, then following these rules will help your interactions. And mm-hmm. another thing that you're really good at is research and observation. So if you see someone who is good at this, look at what they're doing and listen. What are they talking about when something awkward happens? What do they say? How do they fill in the space? And then you can copy it. Anything that somebody else is doing, you can learn how to do, even if they never learned it. If they do it naturally, it doesn't matter. You can still learn it. So we said at the beginning of this guidance, we wouldn't try and convince you that relationships are important. We just tell you the rules. And so if you're still not convinced about the power of relationships, that's okay. We're okay with that. Try following some of the rules or all of them and note the results. Again, it's something you're good at. Research and observation. Treat it like a science experiment. And we're pretty sure you'll get positive results. So you can tell us. You can email us customerservice@manager-tools.com. Email us and tell us what your experiment was and how it went. We'll be super interested to find out, but we'll guarantee positive results.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Awesome. Thanks, Sarah.
Well, thank you, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a different topic.